And we discussed how you want to break electrosymmetry one very simple way is to use boundary conditions. So we can use boundary conditions in RS, in Randazundum, to produce electroweak symmetry waves without a Higgs. And we call these theories Higgsless. And we discussed how these theories could be dual to the original proposals of Technicolor. Technicolor is a theory that gauge n number of Technicolors, and this theory is asymptotically free, for example, as implicitly, but then at low energies, it produces bound states. And those bound states, the depths of those bound states, may break electroweak symmetry. Okay, so if we think about Technicolor, what you expect, the expectation for the S or T parameter is something that goes at the number of Technicolors over 4 pi. The reason is that the new physics is entering into S and T as you can think about loops of your resonances. So in a large N limit, this is the counting you would expect in that. Because I'm computing a loop of NTC resonances, so I'm going to get NTC as an overall factor. So we are going to use this intuition to understand what's going on in ABS. In ABS, you can look at, for example, any two-point function. And what you're going to obtain is that the two-point function goes as 1 over g phi squared k, the log of mu, of the scale, plus pieces that goes as 1 over q over q, q to n. So you look in ABS, what is a two-point function, you will find the conformal expectation, which is the two-point function goes as a log, and the factor in front is going to be the gauge coupling in the back. So what you will expect in large NTC theories is precisely the same. You will find that NTC goes, the two-point function goes again as log of q plus 1 over q n pieces.
So is this the same as the large N expansion?
Yes. So in the large N expansion, your expectation is that, for example, the vector-vector or vector-axial or axial-axial currents, they will have a leading piece that is proportional to the number of Technicolors and a log factor. If you do the same computation, for example, a vector and an axial field in the bulk, the two-point function of this guy also goes as a log, which is a signature conformal symmetry, but now the factor is something to do with the five-dimensional gauge coupling. So what you can do is to build another entry of your dictionary where the factors for the 16 pi squared over g phi squared k is precisely the number of Technicolors. So just by inspecting your two-point function in ABS versus what you would expect in the large N limit of a field theory, you can say that you can name number of Technicolors to this combination in particular, where G5 is the gauge coupling in the bulk. Yes?
Are we saying N doesn't have to be an integer?
N doesn't have to be an integer. We want to interpret it as this is, if I want to go from Hitler's to Technicolor, I will interpret this theme as the number of Technicolors. But of course, if I started with a Technicolor theory, and would be an integer. Okay. But this is the kind of, and this is another entry of our dictionary. What it means is that weak coupling, this is the four-dimensional coupling. Weak coupling in the bulk corresponds to large number of Technicolors. So you want to describe a strongly coupled theory with a low number of Technicolors, don't use ABS. Because it means strong coupling in the bulk. All right. So you see in ABS and in the large end limit, you expect the S and T parameters to be giving you the size of the new sector. The number of Technicolors. But it's also related to 1 over G4D squared, to the weak coupling. So the weaker the coupling, or the more confidence we have on the computation, the larger S and T are. That's pretty bad. So it means that if you want computation ABS, what it seems to mean, if we just look at this scaling, is that we need large electrobeat precision tests, corrections, which is pretty bad. Which it means that it's ruled out.
Sorry. Why does taking color in 5D work better than taking color in 4D?
Excuse me?
Why is this the ADS one better than the normal 4D?
So what I'm saying is precisely because I can estimate, before even computing anything in ADS, I can estimate what the size of these corrections is going to be. It's going to be order NTC, which in the ADS language is this. So it means that this goes as the coupling in ADS, and to be able to just look at two level quantities in ADS, I better have a small coupling, right? Which means a large S and T. Whereas we know experimentally, S and T are deviations from the standard model, so S and T are order zero. So yes, your question is correct. Like, why do then ADS sucks? There is no way of doing a viable model. So when many years ago, Peskin and Takeuchi looked at the ST parameters for Technicolor theories, they said, well, that's a good argument to stop working on Technicolor theories. And because we don't have, in Technicolor at least, we didn't have any other intuition besides the large end, that was the end of the story. That was the death of Technicolor. But in ABS, we have more tools. We can play with more tools. We have an intuition and an understanding of ABS. So the question is there a mechanism to keep S and T order zero in ABS with weak coupling? That's the question. That seems to be an impossible task for Technicolor, just because Technicolor is very hard to approach. So the question we are going to answer today is, can we make use of the let's say, more complexity of ADS to get rid of the S and T? Okay, so so to get rid of the T parameter, or to control the T parameter, we already know what we can do, no? We discussed about a way of controlling the T parameter. What was that, you remember? Spent a long time discussing why the T parameter is so small in a standard model, because the Higgs sector has a custodial symmetry. And then we saw how this custodial symmetry is just a requirement that you can add to your Stoney-Couple theory and obtain that. So, let's start by T. T seems to be the simplest thing to solve because it can be protected by the symmetry. And that's custodial symmetry. Okay. So, there is another entry in the dictionary of ABS-CFT is that a global symmetry that you want to impose on your CFT corresponds to a gauge symmetry in the bulk of ABS. That's our entry. And we discussed yesterday why that was the case. Okay, so custodial symmetry is a global symmetry that we want to impose on our CFT. And the dictionary is telling us that we should instead impose the custodial symmetry but in the bulk as a gauge symmetry. So let's do a test. If that entry is correct, it means that once we impose a bulk gauge custodial symmetry, we are going to kill a lot of the T parameter. So let's see that. So in the bulk of ABS, we had added SU to left already, because we want to break electric symmetry, but we can also add SU to R, and this is the custodial symmetry. So let's do that. We add in the bulk a gauge SU to R besides the SU to left, and then see where is the what is the value of the T parameter under these circumstances. If this dictionary entry has anything to do with reality, what we are going to find is that there is a magic cancellation in the T parameter just because we added this guy. I see that's true. Yes. So when we do that, that custodial gauge symmetry S U to R in the bulk, we obtain that BS is a still order NTC. BS is untouched, but as it happens, the T is of order U prime squared multiplied by NC by another one parameter. So you remember last time when we discussed about custodial symmetry, I told you, well, so rho is going to be one at leading order because there is a global custodial symmetry, like something that goes as g prime squared 4 pi squared, a loop factor, and then a function of a strong dynamics. And I told you, we need to build the dual because this guy has been measured so well that we really need to understand this function. Just imposing a symmetry is not good enough. We need to find a way of estimating this guy because this is order a loop factor, like 4 pi squared, then we are doomed again. And remember that rho is 1 minus alpha t. So what you would expect is that T, the leading order in T is G prime squared, it is. And because we have a dual, that is, we can compute in that dual, we were able to obtain this function of strong dynamics. Okay, so this entry of the dictionary that seemed to be just a, say, hand waving, actually when you just blindly use it, it seems to give you the results you expected, which is custodial symmetry in the bulk as a gauge symmetry indeed protects the T parameter from being too large. So the fix for the T parameter in the bulk is simple. It's just an incustodial symmetry. But what is more important is that the dual gives you exactly this number. So it's not just something that you can fear about having a very large number, but it's something that you can actually compute in the bulk and obtain what is the number here. It's another one number. So from the, we are going to discuss this result, this cancellation of the leading order NTC. So in T, there was a leading order NTC that got cancelled because of this symmetry. And then we ended up with the next two leading order, which is a G prime suppressed piece. So let's discuss this from the 5D and from the 4D point of view. So from the 5D point of view, what we are doing is adding S to left and right in the bulk. And this is an exact symmetry. And if this was exact, the T parameter would be zero. But what you do is to break it here. By breaking it here, we get rid of any zero, one combination of zero modes of the left and right. But what about the Kaluza-Klein resonances? The low lying Kaluza-Klein resonances have very little overlap with the breaking that is happening in the UV. So from the point of view of just looking at the towers of SU to left and SU to right, those towers do know very, very little about what's happening over here. So if you just look at the towers, they are approximately custodial invariant. And those are the guys that are giving you contributions to the T parameter, so they are going to be fine. So from the point of view of 5D, the way we solve the problem is making sure that we impose a symmetry that protects the T, and that all the breaking of this symmetry, the custodial symmetry, is happening very far away from the Kaluza-Klein resonances. Then all the effects are things that depend on G prime plus things that are order 1 over K or 1 over Zedaya suppression. So remember, this custodial symmetry is protecting the T only if G prime is equal to 0. So when I say there's an exact symmetry, it means that it is going to be 0 up to G prime squared corrections. So what I'm doing is making sure that the symmetry is intact except by ultraviolet effects. And those are very small. That's from the 5D point of view. And from the 4D point of view, it's very simple. Okay. This gauge symmetry in 5D corresponds to a global custodial symmetry. So by the same reasoning we did like a few days ago, well, the T parameter is pretty small. Okay. So that's your dictionary for the T parameter. So the S parameter is still very large. And we know there is no symmetry protecting it. So what can we do? S is large, and there is no symmetry protection. And because there is no symmetry protection, there is a hope in using warp extra dimensions, because in extra dimensions we can find mechanisms, or we will call this a dynamical mechanism, to lead to a very small s. From in Randall-Sundum, we may be able to find a dynamical way of protecting the s without asking for symmetries. So let's see that. The S is order NTC, and the way you will see that result in 5D is the following. So let's say that in 5D you have light fermions located here. Well, let's start by the gauge boson. verify that you will have the zero mod is more or less flat, and when there is electropic symmetry breakings, the Lavius and Z wave functions are going to be bent to be a negative wave function after electropic symmetry breaking, whereas the photon wave function is going to stay flat. Whereas the Kaluza-Klein resonances are things that are pretty thick near the IR. So, if you look at the contribution to the S parameter when you use fermions in the bulk, well, so, if you locate fermions in the UV, so the fermions located the zero modes on the UV, what you are going to find is that the S parameter is order 1 and is positive. On the other hand, if you locate fermions in the IR, what you find is that the S parameter is order 1 but is negative. So whenever there is a big overlap, whenever the fermions are towards the UV, you are going to have a positive large S parameter. When they are moved towards the IR, they go to a negative large values. So what do you think is the solution we could find for the S parameter? Sorry, something in between. So actually the solution is to set the fermions flat in the bulk before electropic symmetry breaking. If the fermions are flat in the bulk, the S parameter is zero. And I'm going to explain why. It's a very simple mechanism, actually. So you remember, flat fermions in the bulk is something we could achieve by asking that the mass of the fermion, the bulk mass divided by the curvature, is precisely 1/2. And we call that conformal limit. So we are going to use conformal fermions and then see what is the result for the S parameter, or why the S parameter is very small. In fact, that is small. The reason is the following. So, when I plot this thing, I say this is my zero mode, this is my Kaluza-Klein resonance, let's say N. I'm already assuming something, is that this resonance and this resonance are orthogonal to each other. So, A mu 0 or N, A mu M, two Kaluza-Klein resonances are orthogonal to each other. That's the way I build my Kaluza-Klein decomposition. So if I put the zero mode here and then any other mode here, I'm going to get zero. Right? Because M and N are not the same. And we know that this guy is a constant in the bulk. What it means is that actually the integral of the wave function of my field in the bulk is zero. So now let's see how it works. Well, you can see how it works. S different from zero means that the KKs are contributing to the values, to the measured values of the electric charge, or G, or G prime. But it means that my Kaluza-Klein somehow are talking to the light fermions. So if I could shut up these resonances from talking to the light fermions, I will be done. And this is precisely what I'm doing, because what is an interaction of my light fermion? My light fermion and my Kaluza-Klein resonance Well, if the fermions are extremely flat, this is a constant, this is a constant, and I'm just going to get zero. So by imposing that the fermion follows exactly the profile of the zero mode of the Higgs boson, I automatically ensure that this fermion is not going to couple to the heavier resonances. It's a very trivial solution if you want. Okay, so now when we assume this kind of a scenario with conformal fermions, the S parameter is very small. Not small enough, though. Okay, so let's pause for a moment. Our main issues to build a realistic model of electrosymmetry breaking is to be in agreement with experimental, with the current data. So we had to avoid direct detection, and we also had to avoid contributing too much to the electro-V position tests. So a reduced version of this test is the S, T, and U. If we look at the T parameter, that's pretty simple to solve. We just add a symmetry. And because there is a recipe of what a symmetry means in the 4D side and a symmetry means in the 5D side, it's very simple to do. I do it, I just compute the propagators, and I see that indeed there is a cancellation. The S is a little bit more difficult because there is no symmetry. And there is no dictionary entry for that. But a simple way of cancelling contributions to the S parameter is to make sure that the fermions in the extra dimension have a very particular profile. There is no symmetry entry for that. What it means is that there was no way people doing Technicolor were going to come up with this mechanism. Whereas in extra dimensions, it's super simple. So this is one of the advantages of using an extra dimensional dual, is that everything is in peace. We just put your things, your setup in the bulk, and then you can compute things, and you get an intuition. And here it was very simple. We just need something that is flat. Whereas in Technicolor, there would be no way.
So it's just a different point of view on strongly coupled four-dimensional models.
Yes.
But the things that are natural from one point of view are not necessarily natural from another.
Obvious. And it's always in that direction. Generally, things are simpler in 5D than they are in Technicolor, the understanding of the low energy degrees of freedom.
Are there things that look simple from a four-dimensional perspective that are complicated in 5D picture?
So things that would be simple is large N, but this is large N means just doing an expansion in weak coupling. So I don't think you lose him. Yes. All right. So it is just to be seen if there is a way of inverting the dictionary. Now that we know there is a mechanism in 5D, what does it mean from the 4D point of view? I don't know, and I don't think anybody knows. But it would be very nice to be able to develop this intuition. Okay. So the conclusion of all of this is that you can, what can we say, you can build a realistic model. Realistic means not too loud. Model of strong interactions using the 5D dual. So there must be, if you believe in the ADS CFT intuition, there must be some model out there of 4D that is viable. But we don't have a way of approaching it except using lattice. So it is good that we have this ADS CFT point of view. So I'm done with his less theories, and I don't know if you have any questions, complaints. So, no.
say something with, I don't understand what technical is. Like, I don't know, did we even talk about it? Because I don't remember at all talking about what is technical.
So the only thing I told you is that technical is a gauge theory, SUN. So like it has in QCD. And it's a theory that produces mesons and baryons and low energies. So that's what I said. It's an analog of QCD. Instead of breaking current symmetry, it breaks electroweak symmetry. And instead of producing mesons and baryons at order hundreds of thousands of MeVs, it's producing things at hundreds of GeVs and so on. So that's the idea of technical is just, we know the one situation where there are strong dynamics and we understand something is called QCD. So we are just going to rescale the ideas of QCD to a much higher scale, electroweak symmetry breaking.
Okay, then there's that NTC number, which is just a number. Like
yes, NTC is assuming that instead of SU3, you have SUNTC. And it is not a stupid question.
Well, if we said that before,
so there'll be an extra gauge group for the standard model. So
yes.
That thing cross SU3 cross SU2 cross SU1.
And it's arranged in a way, and the standard model is good. This is an arranged in a way that breaks down, the coupling of this guy becomes strong at electroweak scale. And then it produces, as instead of QQ bar condensates, it produces Tenny bar condensates. They will produce Tenny mesons, Tenny baryons, and so on and so forth. Good question. More questions? And what I was talking about Peskin and Takeuchi is that this came out in the 79, at the same time as supersymmetry. And those theories were very popular, right? And they are protecting the electroweak scale. One of them using supersymmetry, the other, Tendicolor, is protecting the electroweak scale just because it's dynamical symmetry breaking. We discussed about that. But very soon afterwards, like 4 years afterwards, Peskin and Takeuchi said, if you take the strong interaction, the Tendicolor sector, to be just as QCD, but with scale, you are in big trouble. Because the S parameter in QCD is huge. It's indeed NTC divided by 3, and instead of calling it the S parameter, the people doing current perturbation theory, they call it L10, the low energy constant number 10. So it's something measurable. They measure it, it's big. Whereas for a viable model of electroweak interaction or electroweak symmetry breaking, you need your L10 to be very small or your S parameter to be very small. And that seemed to be very difficult in a theory that looks like QCD. Now, it means that our model of Technicolor should be non-trivial. It should be something a bit more complicated than SUNTC. And our so far, the only way to approach this is using the duos. Yes?
So does the pressing S parameter,
yes.
you just have to say that the profile of the fermion has to look a lot like the profile of a zero
yes.
gauge fermion. So that's like saying a fermion has to look a lot like a boson. Is there any sense in which you can have supersymmetric exponentials? Is that what?
Yeah, that would be the idea, but this is no realization of that. Well, that's precisely an intuition, but nobody came up with an idea. And if you come up with an idea,
it's a little bit like supersymmetry hiding there.
Yes, exactly. Instead of, it's fermions and bosons. Mm.
But they have to do the same thing, otherwise bad things happen.
So we could do supersymmetric Tendicolor. Yes.
Yeah, so do people do that?
So Gerget and Palmaro work on ADS, supersymmetric ADS, but they don't find this kind of behavior. Unfortunately. It's because so the gauge bosons are in the vector supermultiple, the fermions will be in the chiral supermultiple, and there is no easy way of making sure that the masses are the same.
Yeah, they have to be
accurate. Yes. No, but it is a very good idea and a very nice way of putting it, and if you come up with an idea of how to do it, it will be an interesting paper. No kidding. Like everybody is chasing ambulances with this film. And if we discover strong interactions at the LSC, this is going to become an important issue. More questions? Okay, so I just want to touch on another use of the extra dimensions for electroweak symmetry breaking. Of course, there are many models of electroweak symmetry breaking. I'm just presenting the ones that I find interesting and also are viable so far. So, another solution you want to the S parameter problem is kind of trivial in a way. So you say S is actually something that goes as 1 over G squared, the mass of my W versus the mass of my new physics. Okay? And this in technicolor goes at the number of technicolors. Okay. So one obvious way of solving this problem is by sending NP. The new physics can be much larger than NW. But then we are back on the same problem as usual. What is unitarizing the WW scattering? Yeah, you're going to laugh, but the other way of using extra dimensions is to build models of a Higgs, but now it's going to be a composite Higgs. And it's going to be a pseudo-Boltzmann boson Higgs. So the Higgs could be so much lighter than the scale of new physics just because the Higgs is a pseudo-Boltzmann boson. So the idea is that, for example, think on QCD. On QCD we have the mass of the row and lambda QCD. And very, very much lower, we have the mass of the pions and chaos. So this is the scale of the strong interactions, or the scale at which the coupling becomes very strong and the resonance starts forming. And this scale is much separated from the scale of the this particular mesons, pions and chaos. And that was a puzzle at the beginning of QCDs. Why there is all these phenomena related to QCD at low energies, and then we have a much lower stage when your expectation will be once the coupling becomes very strong, everybody is formed at that scale. And the solution was that there was a global symmetry in QCD. That global symmetry is SU number of flavors left SU number of flavors right, when NF is the number of massless quarks. When you have a theory with massless fermions, that is, it's a chiral symmetry. Chiral symmetry in QCD is represented as SUNF for the left-handed guys, SUNF for the right-handed guys. So when chiral symmetry is broken, with the QCD resonance shows up, there is a subset of the symmetry that is unbroken. And at the end of the day, we are going to obtain a bunch of Goldstone bosons. Remember, a global symmetry, spontaneously broken, Goldstone bosons. So the pions and chaos are so light because they are the Goldstone boson of chiral symmetry breaking. So this is going to be exactly the same idea. In 100 years ago, a guy called George I and friends, maybe not 100 years ago, but he looks like that. say, well, maybe the Higgs is a pseudo Goldstone boson, meaning it's a Goldstone boson, but there is a small breaking of the symmetry. Okay. And at that time, 100 years ago, we didn't have any bounds on the Higgs. It could be right there. So that makes kind of sense. But then people realized that, okay, so after that, let me go in slower. So if the Higgs is a Goldstone boson, what is the main feature of a Goldstone boson?
Masslessness,
yes. Because there is this Higgs symmetry, pi on Goldstone boson goes to pi on plus a constant. It means that there is only derivative interactions. So if I want to generate a potential for the Higgs, I can't, because this symmetry is protecting, or it doesn't allow to have any term like, for example, mass terms or quartic couplings. Because those terms that don't contain any derivative, when you apply this transformation pi to pi plus constant, are not invariant. So those terms are forbidden by the Higgs symmetry. As Anton was saying, they are massless, and they are just massless because they are protected by the Higgs symmetry. But on top of that, they cannot even have interactions like this one. Okay. But this is a true-level statement, and we know that quantum corrections are going to generate a potential for these Goldstone bosons. For example, using the Coleman Weimer potential. So what is the idea of the Coleman-Weimer potential? Is that Einstein with a theory of a Higgs, for example, with no mass scales and no interactions besides derivatives. So a theory that doesn't have any mass scales. But then, that's a true level. Once I do quantum loops, I'm going to generate a theory with mass scales. And the canon loops you have to think about is, for example, I can have the Higgs. The Higgs is coupled to WW. Well, I can have a loop of WW. That generates a mass at one loop. I can also plug a bunch of H here, and I'm going to generate a quartic coupling. So you can generate a potential, but those would be potentials that are suppressed by loop factors. So it's very nice because you are saying that my theory is protected at true level by a symmetry, and all the violations of this symmetry happen at a loop level, meaning that they are g squared over 4 pi squared. Suppressed. So even if I have new physics, here in those loops, the effect of this new physics will be suppressed by 4 pi. And this will be my mass for the Higgs. So there is a, using the Higgs as a pseudo Goldstone boson, I can understand why there is a big gap between the new physics and my regular Higgs. Beautiful idea. Guess what? It doesn't work. And guess why? Because of experiment. So the 4D Higgs as a pseudo Goldstone boson doesn't work because after that we know that the mass of the Higgs should be bigger of 114 GeVs. And in our Higgs theory, there is a relation between the mass of the Higgs is more or less goes as the quartic of the Higgs multiplied by V squared. So what I'm saying is that the group corrections on the Higgs are bringing down the Higgs to be 100 GeVs versus, for example, 10 TeVs of my scale of new physics. But also, I'm saying that the quartic coupling that I'm going to generate for the Higgs is also loop suppressed. So the Higgs as a pseudo-Boltzmann boson means that lambda and NH are loop suppressed. Whereas after LED, we know that this guy is of order this guy. So my quartic coupling is order one. So the prediction Georgiy Kuhn had made many years ago is that because this guy and this guy are loop suppressed, I will expect a quartic coupling that is very small. So you will expect a very light Higgs, a loop from the electro weak scale. And it's not true. So after LED, we know that the Higgs as a pseudo-Boltzmann boson doesn't seem to be working. But it's a very nice idea. And it's a safe idea because it's keeping one light state and pushing everything else very high, so we don't have issues about flavor or stuff like this. So what is the problem? The way you can view the problem of the Higgs as a pseudo-Boltzmann boson is that you need a three-level quartic. But you also need a loop suppressed mass. So for tricks like this, you can use extra dimensions. So you, I don't know if you want to hear about the particular way of solving this problem, but the idea of IADS models for the Higgs is that the Higgs is the fifth component of a gauge boson that is included in a five-dimensional gauge boson. And the way the symmetry in 5D, the gauge symmetry in 5D, appears in the A5 is precisely a sheaf symmetry. So 5D gauge symmetry leads to this protection for the A5. So the fifth component of a gauge boson in the bulk is going to be a pseudo-Boltzmann boson as well. So we have a starting point. This is the phoenix again of the Higgs as a pseudo-Boltzmann boson. Maybe the Higgs is the fifth component of some Gauge boson. Then it is natural to think that it's a pseudo-Boltzmann boson. And then we are back to the same problem. We knew that this is not working because we need a two-level quartic and a loop suppressed mass. But because in 5D you have many things to play with, there is a solution to this problem. One solution is to say, okay, assume that in the bulk we have an SU3 left symmetry that is spontaneously broken to my SU2 left of the standard model. And I also have a 6 of SU3, which is equal to a singlet plus a doublet plus a triplet of SU2. Okay, so you have now this scalar is a 6 of SU3. But from the point of view of SU2, you can decompose it as having a singlet, having a doublet, so you can So for example, psi double plus, psi double zero, or and a triplet. The triplet is the same, it's just three components now. Psi double plus, triplet, triplet, triplet. So, and then you must be saying, okay, what? So what? Well, the so what is that this triplet is going to contribute to the quartic, but it's not going to contribute to the mass term. So let's see that. If we look at mass corrections, we can do things like my Higgs couples to the singlet, and this guy gets a bit. That gives me a mass correction. Remember, a singlet can only couple to a singlet of SU2, which is S bar H. Another contribution would be things like my Higgs couples to the doublet, a couple here to the Higgs. Why? Because the doublet can couple to another doublet. That's no problem. But what about the triplet? Well, the triplet, we could have stuff like this. The triplet couples to the Higgs and the Higgs. And then we have to think, how does this triplet couple to the Higgs? The Higgs is a doublet, so it's a two-component vector. The triplet is a three-component vector. So the interaction you would write of a doublet and a triplet would be kind Higgs sigma alpha, Higgs, and then you will write the triplet component alpha. So this is the Pauli matrices, you have three of them, so you can write something that is just you to invariant by writing this. So the way the triplet couples to the Higgs H bar H is actually, is actually with a sigma alpha. So when you compute this, this is giving you the trace of the sigma alpha, which is zero. So the triplet, as it happens, it doesn't couple to the any mass corrections. So if you look at the mass corrections from this model, you're going to find out that the mass of the Higgs is corrected and the mass is proportional to the doublet minus the mass of the singlet. So if when I write down SU3 left to SU2 left, I make sure that I don't accept this relation, then there are no mass corrections. So in this model, there is no true level correction to the mass, but there is going to be a Lutz-Cohen Coleman-Weinberg contribution. But let's see the quartic. So the quartic is going to have a triplet contribution. Indeed, for example, you could have the Higgs, exchange the triplet, and now you have sigma alpha, sigma beta, and the trace of this thing doesn't vanish. So the triplet is contributing to the quartic coupling, and lambda Higgs is going to be actually proportional to mass of the doublet minus mass of the singlet minus mass of the triplet, and this is different from zero. So it sounds very for you. For the people that did this model, it seems very natural because they are working on this all the time. So they know how things work and how you can use symmetries to protect this but to violate that and so on and so forth. But at the end of the day, it's a particular case where you can achieve what you wanted, which is a Higgs as a pseudo-Bolton boson with a three-level quartic, but the mass is still small. So it's a viable model for the weak symmetry breaking.
What fixes up the masses in those relations?
Hmm?
What fixes up the masses? So the coefficient should be dimensionless in the mass.
You mean the value? So this.
What makes them balanced mass dimensions? So is it for the mass of the Higgs, is there a Higgs left there?
Yes, sorry, there's going to be a wave square and then I think it's 1 over k here in the acceleration.
Okay. And likewise on the top, there should be a 1 over k.
Yeah, and that's, so it's going to be surpassed by k square. By k square. Okay, no, thank you. So this is just an example of something you can do in extra dimensions that you wouldn't think to do in four dimensions. And I guess I should stop by telling you that, I mean, as I say, beyond the standard model is the frontier. And we don't have any clue of what's going to happen at the LHC, right? So it is normal that we are struggling all the time trying to patch things here and there. Okay? So far there is no natural, convincing, and compelling model of electroweak symmetry breaking besides, you know, the standard model. But that doesn't mean that there is no model out there. It means that we need guidance from data. We need data to tell us where to look. And if you ask my guess, I would say that it's going to be something different from this, but maybe based on those ideas. And that's why it's important to forget about the cornucopia of models and think about the ideas that are behind those models, because those ideas could remain after we understand more from data. The models, I don't think any of them is going to be the real model, but the ideas may be the real ideas. Question? Yes.
Okay. Is K that that K from
the curvature? Yes. So why do we need an extra dimension? Because we want to explain why there is a pseudo-Boltzmann boson, the fifth component of the gauge field. And in the extra dimensions, you can play this kind of games.
Yeah, that's another question. Why pseudo-Boltzmann?
Pseudo is because it is a ghost, exact Boltzmann boson at three level, but as soon as you look at the quantum corrections, it generates it breaks the shift symmetry and it generates a particular potential. That's why it's called
so. Mass.
Hmm?
So it gains mass.
It gains mass at low level.
Yeah.
From the some of the last. No questions? Those are just two proposals. There are many more, but I would say those are the most accepted in the community. And as I say, I don't believe any of them. Not supersymmetry, no assignment, nothing. I think the ideas will be there, and that's why it's important to keep the ideas beyond the particular realization of models. But yeah, I can tell you, there is no compelling natural model for electroweak symmetry breaking in beyond the standard model. It just means that we are idiots, or it means that you guys have a chance.
And the model doesn't look exactly compelling or pretty.
No.
It's there, so live with it.
That's also something to keep in mind. Is that now, when they explain to you the standard model, they say, you're so beautiful, it's just this symmetry, it says you see, Like, 30 years ago, when somebody came and said, I'm going to tell you the truth. Nature, it says you three cross, says you two cross, you one, and there is all this mechanism, approximate symmetries, blah, blah. There is a lot of structure in the standard model, and it is true. It doesn't look nice, but that's what nature is doing. So maybe nature likes to, I don't know, have these stupid triplets doing this, who knows? It's not up to us, that's what I mean. That we don't have to decide based on aesthetical reasons. The standard model is ugly, new physics may be ugly too. I hope not.
I don't know if this is a mean question, but if they discovered at the LHC that one of these models are correct, would the person who thought that of that model win the Nobel Prize?
It would be difficult nowadays to pin down who did what, right? Because, of course, Georgiadis came out with it. Imagine that we discovered that the Higgs is some kind of pseudo-Boltzmann boson, but the behavior is very similar to these people's model. which I don't believe. Do you give the number pairs to your child, or do you just give the number pairs to the person that fixed the problems of your child's model? I don't know. It's actually, I don't think it's going to work that way. I think the way it's going to work is that we will come, there will be more and more evidences of data, like a puzzle pieces. We will put them together, and the person that comes out with the best solution, they will win the Nobel Prize then. Which means you young people have a chance. Yeah, there are so many models out there that it's, you cannot even believe. Yes. And models and variants and engineering and engineering and engineering here and there. Maybe we should wait for data. The way Glashow, Weinberg, and Salam were doing, they had proposals, other people had proposals, and they modified their proposals based on the current data. For the moment, we don't have data except whatever it is, it looks like the Stafford model. Mean questions? No? So tomorrow we will discuss some of the questions you came up with, or we can discuss anything. Come with your own questions. You don't have to even send me an email. Or we can talk in the air. I would rather have questions. Right?